Throughout the ages, history has been altered by word of mouth and the misrepresentation of those who might not have been present when some of the world's most significant events took place. Channelers Barry and Connie Strom bring through the spirits of those who actually witnessed or took part in these historical events and lets them tell their stories in their own words. Welcome to Channeling History. And now, here are your hosts, Barry and Connie Strom.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Channeling History. We're the only show where we speak to the souls that made things happen. And we're brought to you each week on the Pararex Radio Network. I'm Barry Strom, your host, and I'll be doing the channeling of the spirits tonight.
And I'm Connie Strom, your co-host. Last week, we channeled the spirits of three famous outlaws from the Old West, Jesse James, Butch Cassidy, and Billy the Kid. I think you'll enjoy the stories of these famous gunslingers if you didn't hear it last week. The video is available on our YouTube channel, as are all of our videos. They're in Barry's name. We currently have around 525 videos on our channel that encompass all aspects of the paranormal and afterlife. If you'd like to download the videos, go to Podomatic.com and just search Channeling History. And please tell your friends about us so we can continue to grow our audience. Tonight, we're going to be channeling the spirits of three women that promoted the abolition of slavery, women's rights, and suffrage. We'll be speaking with Harriet Tubman, a woman born into slavery, Margaret Sanger, birth control activist and founder of Planned Parenthood, and Susan B. Anthony. These three women changed the world for women.
Yeah, they're incredible spirits. So the opinions voiced on our show are the channeled words of the spirits and do not necessarily reflect our opinions, those of the Pararex Network, or of our sponsors. So before we channel, we always say a prayer of protection. So Connie, let's say the prayer, and we'll begin to channel with our guest tonight.
God, please grant us your wisdom and protection. Grant us the knowledge that we can handle and keep us safe from all things that will harm us. Keep the messages positive and pure love. Keep us safe from our egos. We ask these things in the light of the seen, the unseen, and the honesty of God.
Okay, Connie, this is going to be a really interesting show tonight, so let's get started with it.
Okay, Harriet Tubman was born in 1822 and died in 1913. She was an American abolitionist and social activist. She was born into slavery in Dorchester County, Maryland, and suffered from her owners. In 1849, she escaped to Philadelphia and rescued approximately 70 enslaved people throughout her life. In later life, she became an activist for women's suffrage. So thank you so much, Harriet, for joining us this evening. You were a very strong woman those days. What was it like being a slave in rural Maryland?
It's actually very hard to describe. Being a slave, you had no control over your own life. If your masters wanted you to do anything, you had to do it. There were severe penalties. I was beaten multiple times. I had scars on my back all my life. It was a terrible life. You never knew if your children were going to be sold, if your family was going to be broken up. It was probably the worst of times for those of us who were enslaved individuals.
Yeah. Could you go a little deeper into what it was like for you and your family and what your owners, you said they beat you, but what else did you have to deal with?
The worst thing that we would have to deal with was when our owners would want to sell a member of our family. We had no control over it. If you had brothers and sisters and the owner wanted to get rid of them, he would start bringing people in to look at them, and It was just like you were a piece of livestock. You were paraded in front of him. They would discuss price. And he could sell you just like anything else that he had on the plantation. If you were a farmhand, you would work 7 days a week. There were no safety regulations. They could do whatever they wanted with you. If you were worked in the house, you had it a little better. You would be closer to the family, but that still didn't mean that you would be safe from being sold. It was just imagine yourself being in the same position as, say, a prized horse, because you were treated the same as a horse if they decided to get rid of you.
It's just unimaginable. What led you to believe that you could resist the slave owners? That took a lot of nerve.
Well, I was always feisty. And sometimes I would try to stand up to the owner. I would try. I'm sorry, folks. I'm still fighting this COVID. If I would try to argue with him if I thought he was wrong, I could always, of course, wind up getting the back of his hand or feeling the whip on my back. But my parents, I had good parents. They tried to teach me to be independent. I felt that there had to be better things than being sold as a piece of property. And I dreamed of being free. There were many people in the Dorchester County area that were freed slaves. Sometimes an owner would free a slave. There were many free blacks, just the same as they lived alongside of blacks that lived in slavery.
Okay, you actually married a free black man. What happened? It's like, how was it possible for you to have married a free black man?
Well, as I said, there were free blacks who were living in the area, and we intermingled. The slave owners would often let us get to know the individuals that had been freed. And I met a man, and I fell in love with him. And the owner gave me permission to marry him. So it was a strange relationship, but it wasn't unique in the area.
So what happened when you prayed for the death of your owner?
I was very religious, and I prayed that he would change. And then when he didn't, I started praying that our Lord would take him. And 2 weeks later, he died. And I felt very bad about it because I felt that it was on my conscience and that I should have never done something like that. And I actually felt that I was to blame for his death at times.
So how were you able to escape?
There was a large Quaker community in Maryland at the time. Quakers were abolitionists and felt that everyone should be free. There was what we would refer to as, or you would refer to now as, the Underground Railroad. It was a group of people that, if a slave decided he wanted to try to make a run for it to get to the North, that they would help them do it. I decided that I had lived under slavery as much as I was going to, and that I would actually prefer death to continuing living like I was living. So I was introduced to some individuals that helped slaves travel to the north, and I begged them to let me try to do it, and they agreed. I was smuggled. We traveled mostly at night. We traveled generally in cold weather. We did what we needed to do. The journey could take anywhere from 1 to 4 weeks to get to the north where we would be safe. But we traveled up through Delaware. And finally, when I arrived in Pennsylvania, I knew that I had crossed the line and I was amazingly free.
How big a role did the members of the Quaker faith play in the Underground Railroad?
They played a very large role. The Quakers were very dedicated to the abolition of slavery. The members of their religion would have hiding places for us. They would act as guides to get us through difficult places. And there were also members of other faiths as well that helped establish a route where a slave could try to travel to the north.
Okay. Can you tell us any more about the Underground Railroad and exactly how it worked? You said you traveled at night and at cold times, but
it was a group of individuals that were dedicated to having hiding places in their homes. They were dedicated to having us as safe as possible in our travels. In most instances, they would have very small hiding places built in the homes. They would have false walls. They would have places that the slave hunters would not find us. Keep in mind that as soon as the slave ran away, the owners would put a reward out for their return. So there were people that capitalized on trying to chase down runaway slaves. As times came closer to the Civil War, more and more people tried to escape slavery in the South. And as the strength of abolitionists in the North grew, there were many more people that would try to help them. So actually, it was a very well-organized group of people. They realized the dangers involved. They knew that if the slaves got caught, they would be whipped, they would be returned. Sometimes they would even be killed. But that rarely happened. Keep in mind that slaves were very valuable and that the plantation owners simply were willing to pay fairly large amounts of money to get them back.
Yeah. Why did you feel so strongly about trying to free other slaves?
Well, I had many family members. So in the beginning, I wanted to try to come back and get some of my family members out, my brothers. I wanted my husband to come north with me. Even though he was a free man, he could make the choice for himself. But I generally tried to bring people that I knew. I had many friends, and I just simply wanted to bring as many people to freedom as possible.
What was your belief in God?
I had an incredibly strong belief in God. When I was a child, the overseer was unhappy with one of the other slaves, and he threw a piece of metal at him, and it had struck me in the head and almost killed me. Throughout my life, I heard voices, and I actually thought that I was communicating with God, and I became more and more convinced of his presence and that this was what he wanted me to do.
I suspect you're 100% correct on that. Why were you nicknamed Moses?
They nicknamed me Moses because Moses led the people to the promised land. Through the years, I led many people from the South to the promised land of freedom in the North. So they started to call me Moses.
What was your opinion of John Brown?
John Brown wanted to lead an uprising among the slaves. I thought that he was a wonderful individual. Perhaps the violence he was speaking of was not the way to go, but John made a stand. He stood, he tried to do what he stood for. He was hung for what he did when he tried to take over the army at Harper's Ferry. He was fighting against the U.S. government, which was a bad idea. I think if he would have tried to be more peaceful in what he did, it would have worked. But I thought an awful lot of John.
Did you intend to join him in his raid of Harper's Ferry?
No. I wanted to support him in his raid of Harper's Ferry, but I never thought about personally participating in it.
In 1863, you participated in the Combahee Ferry raid by 300 men from the Union's 2nd Carolina, which was a black fighting unit. As a result of the raid, almost 700 slaves were freed. Would you please tell us about that raid and the role that you played in it?
Well, the commander of the 2nd Carolina realized that I had special abilities in finding different routes and knowing the terrain and trying to work with slaves. He knew that his raid was going to result in many people trying to escape, many slaves. There were very large plantations on the river, and he understood that somebody would have to try to coordinate with the slaves and to work with them. And he wanted to try to take as many away on the boats as possible. When we got there, we had some resistance from Union forces, but many of the slaves actually tried to rush to the boats, actually tried to overwhelm us. By the time we left, we had over 700 slaves that we were helping to escape to freedom. So it was a major accomplishment, and I was very proud to have been chosen to participate.
Yeah, what role did you play in fighting for the Union?
I worked as a nurse, and then I began to spy for the Union. I would go into Maryland. I would see where the troops were allocated. I worked in the hospitals. I did everything that I could do to try to support the Union cause, and I recruited many freed slaves to fight in the Union Army.
Tell us about working with Susan Anthony.
I met Susan, and she was an incredible woman. She was very strong. She felt very strong about women's rights. She wanted women to be able to vote, and she simply wanted women to be treated on an equality with men. She was an incredible force, and the women today, having total equality with men, owes so much to what she did.
Yes. Harriet, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Do you have a final message for our listeners?
Yes. I did what I felt I had to do. I wasn't educated. I was born a slave. I was treated as a slave. My master wanted to sell me as a slave. I responded by doing what I needed to do to gain my freedom. I did many, many things to help others. It was God calling me. It was God telling me what to do. And even though I was but one small person, I managed to help lead many, many people to freedom. It was only because God guided me and helped me help others. So I thank you for allowing me to come through today. I would point out that there are still many people living in slavery throughout the world, and I think people still need to try to assure that slavery or bondage of any type is eliminated. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay, up next is Margaret Sanger. She was born in 1879 and died just in 1966. She was a birth control activist, a writer, a nurse, and she established organizations that evolved into the Planned Parenthood Federation of America. Margaret, thank you for joining us this evening. In the early 1900s, what was the view of the United States government towards sexuality?
There were absolutely laws that precluded individuals from having any material that applied to birth control, to any type of family planning. You could actually be arrested for bringing another woman information on birth control. The government was very adverse. They knew that the laws gave men control over women, and even divorce laws. A man could be a drunk, mistreat his wives, force her to have many, many children, and in a divorce, he would probably even maintain control of the children. The laws at the time were very strict. At one time, I tried to import diaphragms for women from England, and I was arrested for it. When I tried to open clinics to help women, I was harassed and arrested. The laws were very strict. People living today had no idea what took place in the country back in those days.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that knowledge with us, because I suspect most of us did not know that. What role did religions play in the laws concerning birth control?
They played huge roles. The Catholic Church wanted women to have as many children as possible. There were other religions that were the same way. The religions of the time did not want anyone showing women how to restrict the amount of children they were having. Keep in mind that it was a rural economy, and in many instances, the rural families would want as many children to work the farm as possible. So anyone that would try to restrict the number of children that the women were having were, let's just say, not in popular favor.
So was that the main reason that the government took that view towards birth control? They wanted more workers and therefore take in more taxes?
It was, keep in mind that in those days, women could not even vote. Women were treated much like slaves. They couldn't vote. They didn't have equal pay. They were in bondage to their husbands. It was a very, very difficult time for women. We wanted women to simply to have equal rights with men.
What was your opinion of abortion while you were living, and has that changed now that you're on the other side?
I was not in favor of abortion. I felt that the answer was to control the process before the child was conceived. In those days, I worked as a nurse, and many women would try to self-abort. There was no free and safe legal way for a woman to obtain an abortion. I did not personally think that abortion was right. Now, I know there's many people out there that feel that because of my association with Planned Parenthood, that I felt that abortion was a good thing. I didn't. I felt that there was a time for it. I felt when a woman's life was in danger that abortion was what was a route to be taken. But I never felt that abortion should be used as a type of birth control. I was an advocate of family planning. Through that, I meant using different contraception methods. I felt that educating the women. We ran into many poor women that had no idea how to avoid having a child. We tried to educate them into how they could better live their lives. I felt that the lack of family planning was one of the great reasons why women and many families lived in poverty. But I did not, in life, I was not truly in favor of aborting those in the womb. Now that I'm over here, I truly understand that God would never choose to kill a child in the womb unless the mother's life was in danger or there are other reasons for it. But I truly was not in favor of unlimited abortion.
So, Margaret, what was your view on homosexuality?
I had a more liberal view on homosexuality. In those days, there were laws against it. There were many people that truly opposed it. But I lived a relatively liberal lifestyle, and I felt that homosexuality should be a subject of individual choice.
Yeah. Will you define your opinion of eugenics?
I had some ideas about eugenics that were wrong. I felt that that the human race could be improved through selection of individuals that became parents. I felt that there were individuals that had mental disabilities, some physical disabilities, and I felt that these people should be, in certain instances, sterilized so that they did not have the ability to have children that would become social burdens. I know now that I was very, very wrong in that idea. I know that often physical disabilities are part of life plans and that those individuals deserve to live normal lives like anybody else. I was very wrong in some of my opinions. I am willing to admit that now, but Yes, there were certain things about the theory of eugenics during that period of time that I agreed with.
How would you define your opinion of eugenics in the role of racial betterment?
There were times that my concept of eugenics would have affected individuals of the black race. I felt that there were many that were living in poverty and had no way out. And I felt that limiting the number of children that they had would be to their benefit. Keep in mind that I lived at a time where much was changing. Slaves had been freed, but they had no way of raising their families, no way of owning properties. And I felt that in certain instances, the limitations of family size was the only way that they could avoid abject poverty.
Yeah, but when you were living, would you consider yourself a racist?
No, I did not consider myself a racist. There were many races that I felt would benefit from limitation of family size. There were many white people that were living in abject poverty that fell under that classification.
Okay. What is your opinion of the current Planned Parenthood organization? I think it's changed a bit since you were helping start it.
I formed Planned Parenthood for family control, for control of the size of the family, for giving a woman the right to not continually weaken her body by having children. I wanted to do that through different methods of contraception. Today, as I watch from this side, I see that Planned Parenthood has changed drastically from the concepts that I had at the time that we formed the organization. Today, Planned Parenthood sees no limitation on the use of abortion as a means of birth control. They see little limitation into what month an abortion is allowed. I do not agree with much of their policy on abortion. I know that there are times, as I spoke before, that the mother's life is in danger. I understand that there are times that abortions are needed to save the mother. And I understand that there are times that there's no way that the baby is going to be able to live. I know that God does not object to certain circumstances such as that. And now that I'm over here, I totally would prefer to see the organization following the preferences of God rather than an unlimited policy towards abortion.
Yeah, it's estimated that Planned Parenthood performs around 350,000 abortions a year, meaning that approximately 1 out of 10 of its clients receive an abortion. What do you think about that statistic?
I think it is a terrible statistic. I totally understand that each of those children had life plans, and I understand totally that an abortion destroyed that life plan. So I would totally prefer that they would go back to using contraception for family planning and helping avoid conceiving children that were not desired, and instead of aborting, helping to take that baby and find a new home for it where the parents would love it.
What would you tell women who have had an abortion after the abortion?
I would tell them that they need to understand what they did was not right. I would tell them that they need to believe that they can be forgiven for what they did because they can. They must understand that they destroyed a life plan. And they have to understand that when they return, they will see the soul of the child whose life he took. If they ask for forgiveness for what they did, they will find it.
Yeah, you firmly believed that the ability to control family size was critical to ending the cycle of women's poverty. Especially in the inner cities, we're seeing the breakdown of the family and the continuation of the cycle of poverty in spite of birth control being readily available. Why do you believe this is still happening?
I think that this is a product of basically what the politicians have done to the people living in the inner cities. In many instances, they want the people to continue to live in poverty so that they control them by the allocation of government handouts, etc. What needs to be to take place is better education and an effective means of the government supplying aid to these individuals in the inner cities.
Very good. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been very interesting talking with you. Do you have a final message for us?
Yes, I want to thank you for allowing me to come through. I want people to understand that there are many instances where Planned Parenthood does help individuals. There are also many instances, especially through their policy on abortion, where they do not. Women need help, especially women in poverty. I never was in favor of abortion. I had much more liberal ideas towards it when in life, but now that I'm here, I understand that it is not something that should be pursued. So thank you for allowing me to come through. I appreciate the opportunity, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Margaret. Okay, Susan B. Anthony was born in 1820 and died in 1906. She was a woman's right advocate and played a very important role in the women's suffrage movement. She was born a Quaker, and she began collecting anti-slavery petitions at the age of 17. Susan, thank you so much for joining us. During the middle 1800s, will you tell us about the state of women's rights in the United States?
In many instances, women were treated as almost the same as slaves by men. Legally, they had very few rights. As you heard earlier, men controlled everything in the middle 1800s. Women could not even speak in public. They could not hold political office. They could not even vote. The laws of the time gave men total control over a woman. If a woman married a man, he basically owned her. It was very difficult for a woman to obtain a divorce, even if the man mistreated her, even if he beat her. It was, in many instances, the same as if he owned the woman. I wanted women to have the same rights as men. I had a very independent nature. My father was Quaker. He wanted us to do what was right. He wanted us to be very strong. And he wanted everyone to be treated the same. So the laws were very much stacked against women during the 1800s.
To what do you attribute your passion for social justice?
I think that I owe it to my family. They had a very realistic opinion about a woman's role in the world. They knew that a woman was capable of doing basically anything that a man could do. The Quaker religion was incredibly strict. There were many things about it that I didn't like. And as I grew older, I drew away from the religion. But one thing that they did understand was the concept of social justice. I felt very strongly that I wanted to help women gain the same powers that men had.
We all have you to thank for that. What role did Frederick Douglass play in your life?
Frederick Douglass was a freed black man. He was an incredible speaker. He was a politician. He played a huge role in trying to get slaves freed. He was an incredibly intelligent person. I got to know Frederick, and he gave me many ideas that I could use in attempting to politicize the role of women. He was an incredible role model for us that were trying to gain rights for women and to free slaves.
What was more important to you, equal rights for women or equal pay with men?
Well, practically speaking, I wanted to be paid the same as a man was paid. I worked very hard, and I was never able to get the same pay as a man that was doing the same job. So equal pay was very important to me, but I realized that it was only when women obtained equal rights that they would obtain equal pay.
And during the early years of the movement, why did women wear bloomers?
Well, if you ever saw bloomers, they're pantaloons.
Yes.
And they're very similar to pants. Men wore pants. Women wore dresses. Many of the more liberal women decided that the pantaloons would become like a uniform of the movement and would let them dress differently so that people would recognize. I tried wearing them for a while, but I found that what I was wearing was getting more attention than what I was trying to accomplish.
Could you tell us about Elizabeth Cady Stanton?
Elizabeth was a strong woman's rights advocate. She was an incredible writer. She did many, many things. We were the best of friends. She would write speeches for me. I was much better at appearing in public than she was, but she would do much of the dirty work that I required. I was a very weak writer, so I felt that my speeches and talks, when I was allowed to give them, were very weak. She would take a concept and she would write about it, and I would use her information it was, she and I were partners in what we did. We were very close, and she was an incredible person.
How would you define Stanton and your own role in the suffrage movement?
I think that we were the leaders of the suffrage movement. Keep in mind that many people that were in favor of abolition of slavery were not in favor of women's suffrage. There were times that, until after the Civil War, that the two movements were actually in conflict with each other. But I think that suffrage, once slaves were freed, became one of the most important movements facing the United States.
How did the temperance issue correspond to women's suffrage?
Quakers were very emphatic about temperance. The use of alcohol was very dangerous in those days. It would lead to a lot of violence. Many lives were ruined by alcohol, and they still are today. There were very few limitations placed on men. They would drink. They would spend the family income on booze. And temperance, the people involved in temperance were often the same. They had the same, had identical beliefs to those of women's suffrage.
Okay, you mentioned that there was a problem. Women weren't allowed to speak in public. Why was there an issue about that?
It was simply because men did not want them to speak in public. In the beginning, I was even outlawed from speaking at many of the suffrage events. If you did not live through these times, you do not totally understand just how much men wanted to control women. It was an extremely difficult time for us, and there was a lot to overcome.
Susan, what role did you play in the Underground Railroad?
I met Harriet, and I was very impressed with her. I helped organize certain people that provided sanctuary on the railroad. I tried my best to help get the slaves freed, and I worked very hard trying to get the 13th Amendment passed. There was very little in those days that women could do since they couldn't speak. But one thing we could do is put together petitions. And I helped put together petitions that had hundreds of thousands of signatures to try to influence Lincoln and the rest of the government that slavery had to be ended. So I did as much as I could, but because of the laws and what men wanted, sometimes it was very difficult.
So you and Harriet were good friends, huh?
We were good acquaintances. I knew her. I was impressed by her. And I was very, very impressed that a young, black, uneducated woman could accomplish what she accomplished.
She was amazing. You expressed a vision for a racially integrated society. How was that concept accepted by the abolitionists?
Not well. The abolitionists wanted the slaves freed, but they often had doubts about what rights they wanted to give them. Keep in mind that once the slaves were freed, they represented competition for cheap labor. For instance, the Irish that were coming into the country represented cheap labor. And in many instances, the freed slaves, or the freed blacks, represented competition to these people. So there were many issues that had to be sorted out. Once the slaves were freed, the government was responsible for coming up with an answer for them, how to give them work, how to have them employed. So there were many, many issues that many people don't consider anymore.
Yeah, prior to freeing the slaves, Abraham Lincoln was considering relocating the freed slaves back to the colonies in Africa. What did you think of that idea?
I totally disagreed with it. I felt that the black population of the freed slaves needed to be totally integrated on an equal rights basis into our society. I felt that in the long run, that was the only true answer. And sadly, it took many, many more years to guarantee equal rights for everyone and to truly attempt to get them integrated into our total society.
Could you tell us a little more about the rights a woman would have in a divorce concerning the children in the marriage?
In the middle 1800s, she had very little rights. Generally, the husband would even get possession of the children. So she knew that if she tried to get a divorce, it was definitely possible that the husband would get the children and that she would lose her whole family. So it was a terrible time for women. We had many things we had to work on.
Indeed. What role did you play in the passage of the 13th Amendment, which ended slavery?
I worked very hard to get petitions of signatures of people to help pass the 13th Amendment. It was not truly until that amendment was passed that slavery was totally abolished. Reconstruction had been very difficult on the freed slaves. The government of many of the states had changed little after the Civil War. They still tried to penalize the blacks. They did not follow the concepts that the central government in D.C. wanted to use for Reconstruction. When Lincoln was assassinated, that was the beginning of the end for Reconstruction. Once Lincoln was gone, the backbone of a strong government in favor of Reconstruction died with him. Reconstruction became a situation where whites simply continued to profit off the back of the blacks. The 13th Amendment at least gave legal strength to the blacks. Sadly, it wasn't until the 60s that the black population was truly accepted.
How did the Civil War affect the women's rights movement?
It almost destroyed it. When the Civil War broke out, slavery became the foremost issue. Women's rights was pushed into the background because now we were at war, and President Lincoln knew that a vital part of keeping foreign countries out of the war was to free the slaves. So women's rights was almost not discussed during the Civil War. It was pushed totally into the background. And sadly, once the 13th Amendment was passed, we had to work very hard to bring it back into the forefront.
Susan, we really appreciate your joining us this evening. Do you have a final message for our listeners?
Yes, I do. There are still many instances where women are not treated equally with men. The laws have changed. Much has changed through the years. But there are still instances where women do not receive equal pay. They do not receive promotions that they deserve. It is still very difficult in many instances for women to obtain the equality that they deserve so much. There are still times that black individuals or people of any skin color other than white are not treated in true equality. There are still times that there's much to be done. I hope that we set examples in the past that people will continue to remember, and I hope that they will follow our examples. There's still work to be done, and I know that there are still people out there that are capable of doing that work. So thank you for allowing us to come through tonight. I hope that we've brought you some information you did not know. And I just simply want to say thank you.
And I would simply like to say thank you to the three of you. You were all wonderful human beings. You're wonderful souls. God bless you.
And I want to apologize for voice problems tonight. My cough seems to pick tonight to come back, so sorry. Hopefully next week it'll be better. Next week, we're going to channel the spirit of Howard Hughes, one of the great pioneers of the movie and aircraft industry. He was a billionaire, and he was a Class A eccentric. We're also going to have his wife, Jean Peters, with him. And I think that you're going to enjoy hearing about this individual. He was an incredible, incredible personality, to say the least. My 10th book, Modern Message of the Archangels, available for purchase. It can be purchased in paperback, hardcover, and ebook on Amazon. Signed copies are available on my website, barrystrom.com. During the past several years, we channeled over 20 different archangels, and we bring you their messages in a single volume. Everybody, well, most people believe in angels, and this is your opportunity to truly learn as much as you can about them. I think it's a good book. I highly encourage you thinking about purchasing it.
I would like to thank you for joining us tonight on Channeling History. I'm still blown away that we've been doing this for 3 years. We've been trying to bring you the truth about history by speaking to the souls that lived the events, just like the ladies this evening. It's only by understanding the events of the past that we can prepare for the future.
Indeed.
So you all have a wonderful week. God bless you all.
Okay. All of our shows are available on our YouTube channel. It's my name, Barry Strome. You can download them on podomatic.com. Just search Channeling History. So thank you for listening, and please join us Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on the Pyrex Radio Network. Join us in the chat room. You can submit questions. We thank you so much for listening, and hopefully we will be back again next week.
Thanks for listening to Channeling History. Tune in again next week for another electrifying episode, as we never know who will make an appearance or who will come through the portal. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2020. Our story begins by Kevin MacLeod, licensed through Incompetech.com.